idea that perhaps aliens are using DNA as a way to carry messages throughout the cosmos. And that seems like a startling idea until you discover what it is we're posed to do with DNA, which is at least as dramatic and also contains an intentionality. And so we want to think very carefully about what our intention is.
Yes, indeed. Well, I hope we do think about it. I guess that's all I would say.
Well, thanks to the duo who seem to have production talent right in their genes, senior producer Gary Niederhoff and operations manager Barbara Vance.
Thanks also to financial support from Rena Shulsky David and Sammy David and to the William K. Bowes Jr. Foundation. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, a nonprofit scientific and education organization whose scientists study the origin and nature of life, including the asteroids and comets of our solar system. And big thanks also to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to an episode of Big Picture Science called DNA, Nature's Hard Drive. And if you'd like to hear more Big Picture Science episodes, well, you could download them to your own hard drive, and you'll find them in our archive at bigpicturescience.org.
And if you're a podcast listener but prefer listening to over-the-air radio because your kid brother reprogrammed you to want that, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, consider letting them know you like the show.
This is WHFR Dearborn.
It was a cold October morning when I first met Emmy Lou. Looked to be the little runt, but there was something there I knew. Through months of intense training, growing stronger day by day, seemed to know my every thought and would always lead the way. More than a German shepherd, she was my closest friend, true and faithful partner who would be there to the end. Always right beside me, standing strong and tall. The grace of God goes with her, four-legged hero, giving all. Deployed into a battle zone, hell on earth to me. Emmy knew the dangers that I could never see. Just like Cody, Tina, Buddy and Quinn, to name a very few, served her tour of duty until her time on earth was through. More than a German shepherd, she was my closest friend, true and faithful partner who would be there to the end. Always right beside me, standing strong and tall. Grace of God goes with her, four-legged hero, giving all. Well, now Emmy has gone home now. It was a cold October morn. Somewhere in this land of ours, another hero's born. I think about her always when I cross that rainbow bridge. She'll be waiting right there for me and come running down the ridge. I'll cry and then I'll smile big when I think of the path she trod. And it's no coincidence in my mind that dog spelled backwards is God. More than a German shepherd, she was my closest friend, true and faithful partner who would be there to the end. Always right beside me, standing strong and tall. Grace of God goes with her, four-legged hero, giving all. Yeah, the grace of God goes with her, four-legged hero, giving all.
Welcome to Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. The views and opinions expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn. Hi, I'm your host, Lynn, and today we're discussing the Michigan War Dog Memorial with Phil Whiteloff, president of the Michigan War Dog Memorial, and singer-songwriter Kenny Lang will be joining us shortly by telephone. Phil, thank you so much for being here today. This is one of the most amazing projects I've seen.
Well, thank you very much.
And tell us a little bit about you, your history, and how did you get involved with the War Dog Memorial?
Well, I'm a U.S. Army veteran, served in the early 60s, and of course, president of the Michigan War Dog Memorial. How I got involved with this was somebody mentioning an old abandoned pet cemetery had a monument in the center of it. It said War Dogs. It had some writing on it. And so I decided I'd go take a look at this. So I grabbed my girl. I had a German Shepherd at that time. Her name was Cody. She was still with me. And we went for a walk. And sure enough, we found the big monument. However, it was all grown up. It was nothing but brush, sapling trees, vines, all kinds of stuff. It was absolutely a disaster. And so we said, gosh, somebody should clean this up. And of course, you know, how many times we all said that to ourselves, somebody should do something. Well, we decided, let's do something about it. So I went to the VSOs, the American Legion, the AMVETS, the VFW, and we formed a detail, got a hold of a few canine supporters, and we set a date. Let's go up and see if we can't clean this pet cemetery up. On that day that we set, I was absolutely elated. Over 55 people showed up. People had a warm feeling in their heart for these dogs, and at this time, most of them are all pets, but they were somebody's lovable pet. And it was a disaster that the cemetery had gone to what it's gone to. So that's how I got started.
Okay. And where is the cemetery located?
The cemetery is located in South Lyon Township on the corner of Milford Road and 11 Mile, just a couple miles south of I-96 through New Hudson. You can't miss it. We got about 22 American flags flying out there right now. But I guess to understand what our motivation was, what inspired us to really do what we did, you kind of have to go back and take a look at the history of the war dogs. It all started about 100 years ago. The canines have been fighting alongside our men and women ever since World War I. In World War I, the United States did not have a dog program. The French did. And so they were trained in three main disciplines. One was a messenger dog, one was security dog, and one that I really like was a search and rescue dog. And this dog was trained to do one thing. After there was a frontal attack between the trenches, this dog was trained to go out in no man's land and find a wounded soldier, bring back an article of his clothing, anything he could carry, back to the stretcher bearers, then lead the stretcher bearers back to that wounded soldier. They saved thousands and thousands of lives during that war. They did their job. That's what they was trained to do. And then we went to World War II. The United States decided maybe we should get involved in this dog program. So they thought, okay, well, how do we get started? So they formed what they call Dogs for Defense. And then the quartermaster in the United States Army was given a directive and an order. Secure dogs for defense and have them ready for combat in 12 months.
Well, that's a tall, tall order. Where are you going to get all these dogs? Where are you going to get the handlers? Where are you going to get the trainers? So they decided to put a call out to the nation. And of course, in 1942, the people were extremely patriotic, and over 20,000 dogs were donated to the cause. However, all the Chihuahuas had to be sent back. They just didn't make the cut. So then, like anything in the military, they'd set standards. And the Marine Corps preferred the Doberman Pinscher, and the Army preferred the German Shepherd. So they, now we're going to get all your trainers. Well, AKC stepped up, and they asked all their trainers throughout the country, would they donate their time to the different bases to help train these dogs? And they did. They all stepped up. Now, we're going to get our handlers. Now, those of you who are out there that have been in the military will understand this very well. The sergeant calls formation. He walks down the line. Young man, did you have a dog when you was home? Yes, Sergeant, I did. Great. Stand over there. You just volunteered. Young man, was you raised on a farm? Yes, Sergeant, I was. He said, great. Stand over there. You just volunteered. So that's how they got their volunteers for handlers. Now they started working. The trainers were doing a great job of teaching the handlers as well as the dogs. In the spring of 1943, the first dog platoon was deployed to Guam. 2 weeks after their arrival, the casualty rating dropped 70%. That's 70%. That's a huge number. In the 550 missions that were led on Guam, and it's led by a war dog, not one was ambushed. The dogs used superior nose, eyes, and ears, and they could deplete the enemy over 200 yards away. So they did their job. According to military records, canines saved 15,000 lives during World War II. They did their job. Then we go to Korea. Now, Korea, based on what we see today and what we have seen in the past, was a short war, and only one dog platoon was deployed. A dog platoon consisted of about 28 dogs. Matter of fact, I'd like to tell you a story. This story is happened about probably 4 years ago. It was Memorial Day in the little town of Milford. We were assembling at the American Legion parking lot, getting ready for the Memorial Day parade. And I was standing there with my trusted companion, Cody, again, a German Shepherd. And a gentleman walked up behind me in his dress blues Marine Corps uniform, looking very, very sharp. He said, young man, can I pet your dog? And I said, sure. And I said, he said, I'd like to tell you a story. He said, I'm a combat veteran from the Korean War. One morning, we had an assignment, and we was going out on patrol. And we was being led by this very large German Shepherd. And he said, as we got down the road, about 25 yards from this bridge, the dog alerted. Everybody went down on one knee. Two men went off to the right flank. Two men went off to the left flank. They went and checked the area out, came back and reported that it was all clear. So the command was given to move out. We took about 2 steps, and the dog alerted again, sat down and wouldn't move. They knew something was up. So 2 men went off on a bridge, and sure enough, right in the middle of that bridge was a tripwire. He said the dog was picking up the wire, singing in the breeze. He was trained for booby traps. He said, there isn't a day it doesn't go by that I don't think about that big dog. Not only did he save my life, but he saved the life of that whole patrol. So these are stories that you can if you even Google war dogs, you can see these and read some of these stories of the heroics of what these dogs did. And according to military records, they saved 3,000 lives during that conflict. Now we go to Vietnam. A whole different ballgame, a different warfare, jungle warfare. The dogs are trained again in more disciplines, in the booby traps and explosives. You know, then the scout dog. The scout dog was a great dog. The scout dog was the one that always walked point on the patrols. He was out front all the time. Most dangerous spot for a patrol. But he did his job, and he did it very well. As a matter of fact, I'd like to tell you another story. This is a story about a young man in Kentucky. He's 18 years old. He decides one morning, I'm going to join the Army. I'm going to go fight in this Vietnam place, wherever that's at. So he joins the Army. And halfway through basic training, recruiters came down through looking for dog handlers. And he thought, you know, I've had dogs all my life. I love dogs. I think I'll sign up for that. So after his basic training was completed, he went into dog handling school. It's another 8 weeks course. And he loved it. He did a great job with it. He bonded with his dog, and everything was going great. Next thing he knew, he's on a plane heading for Vietnam. He gets into Vietnam. It takes about a week to go through the reception center to get assignment. He was assigned to the 33rd Scout Dog Unit in Peleliu, and that's up pretty much where the action's at. 2 weeks after that, he gets his first assignment. The military wanted to capture a VC for interrogation. So the intelligence group plonked out an area where they wanted to set up their ambush to capture one. So that afternoon, about 4 o'clock, a deuce and a half come by, picked them all up, took them out within a half a mile of the ambushed zone, and dropped them off. Then they walked into the jungle. Well, they found this trail they was looking for, and they lined both sides of the trail, and then they thought they would wait. And they waited, and they waited, and they waited. Well, it starts to get dark, and those of you who've ever been in the jungle know what's happened when it gets dark. There is all kinds of noise, there's critters, bugs, there's birds, animals. Well, his dog, all of a sudden, jumped up, faced to the rear, and alerted. And he said, well, he said he just alerted to all the noise coming from the jungle. So he grabbed his collar, gave him a jerk, and made him turn around. About 5 minutes later, his dog did the same thing. He jumped up, faced to the rear, and alerted. He grabbed his collar, and all of a sudden he remembered something he was taught in dog handling school. The master trainer had told him over and over again, trust your dog, trust your dog. So he sent a message to the commander, and he said, we better be aware, there could be something coming up behind us. Well, within about 10 minutes, a firefight broke out. The VC did see him set up, and they were trying to sneak in behind him. And that's what the dog was trying to tell him. There's somebody coming up behind you. Well, the firefight lasted just a very short time. The VC was pretty much taken care of. One of them was wounded. They captured him. So therefore, they considered that a mission accomplished. So that's what the dog did for them. It basically saved their life.
Knowing more than the humans knew.
Well, they were trained for that. That was their main training. Their main function was to save lives. That was their main function, and they did a fantastic job doing that. So, and in Vietnam, according to military records, they saved 10,000 lives. Now we're up to 28,000 men and women that would not have come home if it wasn't for the bravery of a dog. That's why we have to respect them and honor them for what they've done, and how they bond with the humans and they watch out for us. Then they went on to fight in Bosnia, and then they fought in Iraq. And today they're still in Afghanistan. Right now there's about 2,800 teams scattered throughout the world doing their job and protecting us. So, but now I'm gonna take you back to Vietnam a little bit. Now I'm gonna have to tell you what happened there. Towards the end of the war, the word came down that we're going to pull out of Vietnam. The morale shot sky high. Everybody was great. Let's get out of this godforsaken place. All the handlers ran to the kennels. They grabbed their dogs, said, buddy, we're going home. We're getting out of here. We're going home. And they hugged them, and they had themselves quite an afternoon. 2 weeks later, an order came down from Washington. It read, leave the dogs. The handlers couldn't believe it. What do you mean, leave the dogs? These dogs have been fighting alongside us. You can't leave them. They argued, and of course you're not going to argue too much in the military, but they did protest about leaving the dogs. After several meetings, Washington stood the ground, and unfortunately, they continued with that order. Sad but true. They was going to leave the dogs. The handlers only had two choices. Give their dog to the South Vietnamese Army or euthanize them. Well, the big problem of giving them to the South Vietnamese Army was the dogs were trained on the Vietnamese scent. They wouldn't know north from south. You give them to any Vietnamese, he's apt to tear them right up. And most of the handlers said, I would not allow any Vietnamese touch my dog. And so they walked into the tent with their dog, and they walked out with a collar and leash in hand. And they put him down. Such a sad, sad situation that happened. A good friend of mine, his name is Johnny Mayo. He lives in South Carolina. He's the founder of the South Carolina War Dog Monument. He was a dog handler in Vietnam. He had two dogs. His first dog was Tiger. And Tiger, on his second mission, did trip a tripwire, and he succumbed to the shrapnel, and he died. His second dog was Kelly, and he stayed with Kelly all the way through his tour. And here's the unfortunate thing again with the dogs. The handler and the dog bond so tight. I mean, the bonding is so tight between them. They're together 24/7. Well, when his tour is up, the dog's tour is not. So he goes home, the dog stays. And then he's assigned to another handler. And that dog will stay there until such time that either they retire him, or what happened in Vietnam naturally is they put him down. But his dog saved his life more than once. And it's just a great tribute to understand that these dogs are just protect their handler and will give their breath and their final life just to protect them. So.
Wow. Wow. That's it's a lot to take in.
Yes, it is.
Wow. Were you involved with dogs in Vietnam at all, or
no? No, okay. I was not. I served in the early '60s, '62 to '64. Mm-hmm. Then I stayed in the reserves for quite a while, but I was pre-Vietnam, so I stayed right at Fort Jackson, South Carolina.
Okay.
So, all right. But most of my buddies are Vietnam veterans, and how I got involved in it is just sitting around one night talking to some of my veteran friends, and a couple guys came in. It was dog handlers. Mm-hmm. And me being a dog lover and owning German Shepherds most of my life, I got very involved in their story. And then I talked to the Vietnam Dog Handlers Association out of Texas and the U.S. War Dog Association out of New Jersey. And I just kind of one morning said, I think I'm going to pick up the torch and carry their message. Because these dogs have no voice.
Yes.
And many of them give their entire life serving us.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk for them. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've been doing for the last 4 or 5 years.
Right. Oh. And you've been doing some phenomenal work. With regards to the cemetery itself, can we talk about that a little bit? The wall and
sure.
Some of the other features?
Well, when we first started to develop the Michigan War Dog Memorial, you know, the first 2 years was just strictly cleanup, mm-hmm. restoration, cleaning up the old pet cemetery, which was called Happy Hunting Ground Pet Cemetery. And once we got it all cleaned up, that's when we decided, let's rename this, if we can, to the Michigan War Dog Memorial. And let's honor all the military dogs and give them a final resting place with full ceremonial honors. So we went to the township and got permission to start interment again, but only for service dogs, no pets. So we did. The first two dogs that we interned were military dogs. And it's interesting because I didn't know exactly how to conduct a internment for a military dog. What was the proper procedure? Was there a procedure? We didn't know. So we sent a message out to the DOD, the Department of Defense, and asked them what is the proper procedure to bury a military dog. Well, they came back and said basically they didn't have one. It's up to the unit of what they wanted to do. So we thought, all right, we'll develop our own. So our committee sat down at a round table and just kept throwing ideas out there. And the first one went pretty well, but then we had another meeting afterwards and says, okay, let's run this like a company. What went right? What went wrong? What could be improved? So we kept working on it. The second burial was much better. By the third burial, at this point, I think we got it. And what we do during an internment for a military dog, and we will do this also for a police dog, is we have a bagpiper that comes. We have a full color guard. We have 8 German shepherds that escort the ashes to the table of honor. We have a colonel from the Air Force that does the invocation. I usually read off the bio of the dog. We let the handler make that decision. If the handler can do it, then they'll do it. Otherwise, I will read the bio. We give the handler a folded American flag. We play taps on the bugle. We do Amazing Grace from the pipes. And those same 8 German shepherds that escorted the ashes, they've been trained to howl on command. And it's called a canine salute to their fallen comrade. And they do a semicircle in front of the table of honor, and they howl for 30 seconds. That's what we do. That's the ceremony that they get.
Wow.
At about that time, my wife passes out the Kleenexes.
Of course.
But it's our way of showing our respect and honoring these canines. We also give them a monumental style headstone, which on that headstone will be their last unit patch etched in. Of course, their name, their tattoo number that's in their left ear, that's actually etched on a dog tag, and then whatever the handler wants to say on the headstone. Mm-hmm. Now, we do all this at no cost to that handler, to that owner. This is our way of showing our respect. We do it mainly because of people stepping up and making donations and keeping us running like that. And the monument company that does it for us, he gave us a good break. I mean, he doesn't charge us that much. Mm-hmm. And he does the stones. He brings them all away, sets them for us. So we really appreciate what he's done.
They are soldiers.
Most definitely.
They are soldiers, yeah. Like any human soldier. The granite wall. Talk about the granite wall.
Well, the granite wall is about maybe 3 years ago. I just had this idea. I said, there's got to be a way I can get the names of all the dogs that were left behind in Vietnam. And their tattoo numbers. You got to have the tattoo numbers because so many dogs are named the same. Mm-hmm. So we started searching. And I was calling all over the United States. Different war dog association, little clubs. And I was getting partial lists of these dogs. Like in Louisiana, they only had the dogs from Louisiana. So, and I talked to a guy out in Arizona. He had a spreadsheet, but he didn't have all the dogs. And I kept working at it. And I was starting to get pretty frustrated. I thought, well, maybe if I get all these partial lists and do my own spreadsheet and see if I can't come up with a complete list. So one morning, I'm thinking about it. And so I gave a friend of mine a call. I just met acquaintance with him. His name was John Burdum. And John Burdum was the founder of the National War Dog Monument down in Lackland Air Force Base. And so I called him up and I said, John, I'm getting very frustrated. I'm trying to find the names of all the dogs left behind in Vietnam. And he said, well, what are you going to do with that list? And I says, well, I want to build a black granite wall and have all their names etched on it so we can memorialize them so they'll never be forgotten. He said, wow. He said, if you plan on doing that, then I will help you. He said, I have all those names. And you could have blown me off right off the chair. You have all their names? He said, I have all their names and their tattoo numbers in alphabetical order. Wow. He said, so I'm going to trust you with it. And he says, I'm going to go ahead and send it to you on your email. And 10 minutes later, I had that list.
Oh, my gosh.
4,234 dogs.
Wow.
That's how many were left behind. So I said, all right, now we've got something. So then I got a hold of a monument company that fabricates for all the divisions in the military down in Lebanon, Ohio. Talked to him, and he says, well, do you know exactly what you want? And I said, well, I sketched it out on a yellow pad, but I said, I guess I can scan it and send it to you. So I did, and he was nice enough to make me a nice computer drawing. And I told him what I wanted to do, and he says, we can do that. I said, great. And I said, now, what's it going to cost? You know, well, it was rather expensive. And I said, well, we're going to start our fundraisers. And I says, as the money comes in, I'll just continue feeding it to you till you feel comfortable to start it.
Okay.
He says, okay, that's a plan. So we did. We started our fundraiser. We sent the message out what we wanted to do and why we wanted to do it. And I'm just sitting here and I get goosebumps when I think about it, because it only took us 90 days to raise $40,000. When people realized what we were doing and why we were doing it, the money just came in. Corporations were sending us, you know, donations for that. I was down to, I think we had, at that point was still $8,000 short, and it was $12,000 short, and I get a call from the president of the U.S. War Dog Association, New Jersey, and he said, Phil, how are you coming on your fundraiser for the wall? And by the way, he was a Vietnam dog handler with the Marine Corps. So, and I said, we're coming pretty good. We're about $12,000 short. And he says, now, is my dog's name going to be on that wall? And I said, yes, Smokey will be on your wall. And he said, all right, you no longer are short $12,000. I'm going to send you a check. And again, it just about blew me over. So we had the money. So then we did the fabrication. It's 22 feet long, 5 feet tall. It's all pure black granite. And on the back side, the fabricator, which he does photo etching, I don't know how they do that, but it's beautiful. He took actual scenes from Vietnam of the dogs in action and etched it on the whole back side of that wall. It's absolutely gorgeous. Mm. So now we're going to have a dedication. So we set up a day for the dedication. We had over 40 Vietnam dog handlers show up that day. They came from all over the United States to be there. They wanted to see their dog's name on that wall. And we had a big ceremony. There was probably about 400 people showed up. We had, of course, the color guards and all that. We had the law enforcement was there helping us. But at the end of the dedication, I said to them, I said, all right, you dog handlers, go find your dog. And they all went over that wall, and you could see them running their finger down the list and just all of a sudden stop it right there. And they found their dog. A lot of emotion. A lot of emotion that day, because it was finally their battle buddy was recognized, and there was closure, which they had never had in the last 50 years.
Sure.
You know, it's been over 50 years. And, you know, the dogs were just forgotten. Well, no longer. Not at the Michigan War Dog Memorial.
Right.
They are totally memorialized. They are never be forgotten. And when people walk by and they read their name, they'll live on forever.
And you have a wonderful website. I must say it's a wonderful website, and you can see the wall. The back shows along with the front with all the names. You want to give us the site?
It's mwdm.org. That's www.mwdm.org.
So Michigan War Dog Memorial. Easy enough, right? And on the line we have Kenny Lang, and we heard Kenny's song at the beginning of the show. And
how you doing, Kenny?
Excellent, Phil. How about yourself?
Fine, thanks.
Kenny, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Believe me, I'm way out in St. Clair. I'd be in that room with you guys.
But
Phil, you've just done such a remarkable job with that, and you know, I got to be a small part of the dedication of that wall, and it was it still ranks as the number one gig that I've ever done.
Well, the song that you put together for us, Kenny, it's unbelievable. And again,
thank you so much.
Yeah.
And it's not done either. It's going to keep raising us some money. So.
Oh yeah, that's.
Yeah.
People, when they hear it, they say, "Where can I get that?" Well, you can get it right here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Thanks to Kenny Lang.
All right. And I didn't announce this at the beginning of the show, but Kenny, we did open with the song, and as of 2:01, the show is a podcast. It's out there forever,
okay.
Which means that the song is out there forever. Anytime you tune into the Tuesday Talk, it's
excellent.
The beginning of the show.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
Like I said, it was a total labor of love. My producer Joe Giza, you know, I called him up like the week before. I didn't even know it was going to happen. You know, I talked to Phil and I put the song together, and Joe and I recorded it, and I sent it over to Phil. He says, "Can you do it at the dedication?" I'm going, "Whoa, yeah, definitely." And then I told my producer afterwards that we needed to have it done as fast as possible, and Joe was just incredible. He put the thing together at no expense. No expense to the War Dog Memorial at all. All proceeds from the sale of this CD single, all proceeds, every last penny, goes to the Michigan War Dog Memorial. They incurred no cost on this at all. You know, we took care of it all.
Kenny, I think before you joined us, Phil made a very profound statement, and that's when people understand what's going on, that the money just comes. People are willing to support this because it is so important.
Yeah, it is important. The awareness needs to be raised. It really does, because people don't realize how many lives were saved by the dogs.
Right.
You know, they don't realize that. You know, I'm sure Phil's told you all the stats and everything. It's just incredible. You know, and just on my part, just for knowing Phil and his wife Barb, I mean, it's outstanding. I can't say enough about him.
Thank you.
I'm not sure where we go from there, Phil. you had a couple stories you wanted to talk about, other people that stepped up.
Yeah, I'd like to just mention a couple of
before you do that, Phil, though, I've got to get ready for a show, so I'm going to kind of let you guys go if that's okay.
Okay. All right.
But I just want to thank you guys for allowing me to be a part of this today. Thank you so much, Lynn, Phil. You guys are the greatest.
Kenny, thank you so much.
Thanks, Ken.
And we'll end the show with a song again, too.
All right.
Great.
Sounds good. God bless you guys. Take care.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
And that was Kenny Lang, who wrote the War Dog Memorial song that we heard at the beginning, Four-Legged Hero.
Four-Legged Heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would like to bring up a couple of people that really stepped up here in the last, I'm going to say, 6 weeks. And there's been a lot of them, and I hate to, if you start mentioning them, you got so many other people that did it, but what they did is just so outstanding. The first one I'm going to mention is the Michigan Green Industrial Association. And this is the group that there's like 70 landscapers associated with them. And what they did, they came to us and said, we're very impressed with what you've been doing out here, and we're going to give you a day of service. And I wasn't sure what that meant yet, but they started explaining it to me, that they're going to bring in various different landscapers, and they're going to do a complete makeover of the entire cemetery, the entire memorial. And I'm like, wow. So I met them out there at the memorial, and we're standing there in the little walking path, and they says, all right, Phil, what would you like to have us do? And I said, well, if you look around and see what's been done so far, that was just our vision. We did not have a landscaping consultant to tell us what to do. You guys are the expert. You tell me what I need. In other words, you got a green light. And they said, fantastic. And I'm telling you, what they've done out there is unbelievable. The things that they brought in and the landscaping they've done. Because that was one of our mission statements, is not only to restore this hallowed ground and turn it into the War Dog Memorial, but also to set it up as a park setting. We wanted to have a nice park setting for people would come and show their respect and feel comfortable in it as a park setting. And they did it. They did it for us. I'm just so tickled to death when I go out there just about every other day. And I just sometimes will just stand there and just look at what they've done. It's unbelievable. So big thank you goes out to that organization. So, and the other person, you just heard him a minute ago, Kenny Lang. Kenny came to me one day and he said, I'd like to write a song. I said, oh, great. And he said, I'd like to have permission to use some of the names that's on the headstones out here, some of these canine heroes. And I said, well, you most definitely have my permission to do that. So he said, okay. Well, he did. If you heard the song, you heard Cody. Matter of fact, Cody was my dog, which sometimes gets to me. But he's got Quinn in there, and he's got Buddy in there, and they were military dogs and police dogs. And they were regular canine heroes. So, and that's exactly the way he wrote the song. But then I heard later, because he told me, he said, we're going to do that for you. Well, he really meant that. I mean, I got the wind that he may have even invested his own money to get all this made up, all these CDs made up. But he did not want to charge us anything. He wanted to make a contribution. He wanted to be part of what we're doing. And that was his donation to our cause. So a big thank you goes out to Kenny Lang. He stepped up. And I just love it when people, they don't want anything in return. They just want to step up and they want to help. And so thank you, Kenny Lang.
He's a great musician and a friend of WHFR too. So yeah, and a friend of the Michigan War Dog Memorial. You mentioned almost in passing about some of the police dogs.
Yeah.
Can you enhance that a little bit? Tell us a little bit more about the police dogs.
Well, what I'd like to kind of explain how this all came about with the police dogs is after we had done, you know, three or four military burials, we was having our normal little committee meeting, and somebody brought up the idea and said, well, wait a minute, you know, if you stop and think about it, the police dogs do the same things as military dogs. They're trained the same way. Mm-hmm. You know, they chase the bad guy. So, you know, we should put them on the list and honor them as well. And we thought, yeah, why not? So we did. And right after we kind of announced that we would take care of the police dogs, we had like three burials right in a row of police dogs. And it was quite touching. The first one really kind of got to me a little bit. Is the dog was only like 7 years old, and he got prostate cancer, which is very unusual. He got prostate cancer. And by the time they discovered that he had that, it was like stage five. And within 2 weeks, the dog died. Well, the deputy could not, I mean, he was so shook up. because that dog had been riding with him for the last 3 years, every single day. And he was just so emotional about it. So we did him right. We did the same type of ceremony for the police dogs we did for the military dogs. Mm-hmm. So at least he got a good send-off. Mm-hmm. But then later on we got to talking about, how about other dogs that serve us? You know, why wouldn't they be allowed to be into this program? So again, we sat down and started discussing it among ourselves. We said, well, we got the military dog who saved thousands of lives on the battlefield. We got the police dog. It protects their partner and their community. How about the service dog? It gives a handicap more independence. They should be honored. They donate their whole life to serve us. Well, what about the search and rescue dog that finds our lost children or our seniors who've become confused? How about the therapy dog? The therapy dog that comforts the ill and the elderly. And the companion dog that gives a soldier with PTSD a sense of security. So we all voted and we made that a decision that we will honor canines that serve and protect us. And these are when the dogs serve us every single day. And again, they may give their entire life serving us. So they should be honored. And so we've opened it up to those type of dogs as well.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Matter of fact, just 3 weeks ago, let me back up a little bit. About a year ago, the Oakland County Sheriff's Canine Unit, which I know those guys quite well, talked to me about the dogs that have since passed with their unit. And they was talking about maybe making some kind of a headstone for them, or one at a time, or they would just kick it around. So I got a hold of them about 4 months ago. And I said to them, I said, you know, guys, I tell you what, and the MWDM will do this for you. We're going to erect a monument for the Oakland County Sheriff's Canine Unit. And we want a list of all the dogs that have passed since the conception of the unit. And I said, can you get me that information? I need the dog's name, his birth date, and end watch date. And I said, we're going to do a monument for you. And they thought, wow. So it took about 6 weeks, but we got all the names and got everything together. I called my good buddy, the monument guy, who's been doing the work for us, and I told him what we're going to do. And so he, again, gave us quite a break. But we made a real nice monument. It's 8 feet long, and it's about 4.5 feet tall. And right now it has 21 names on it. And we've got it set up so it's a living document. He can come in and etch more names when it's required. So it will continue on for the Oakland County Sheriff's Canine Unit. And 3 weeks ago we did the dedication. And we had police officers, and we had state police. We had deputies. I mean, and all kinds of dogs were there. I imagine people driving by and seeing all these police cars were like, what is going on?
What's wrong?
But we had a big crowd, and we unveiled that monument for them. And since then, they're tickled to death that we're honoring their dog. And they've already brought out a big, nice gray blanket for them. So we're pleased to do that. And again, we did that for them is because we want to show our respect for our law enforcement as well. I mean, these guys protect us every day too. And in this day and age right now, not a lot of people look good at them. And man, I'm telling you, they protect us every day, and they do it because they love their job. It's not a high-paying job either. It's love doing it, and we should show more respect for them. So.
Yeah. Well, thanks. That's interesting, and it's good to see that the cemetery is, this isn't going to sound right, but the cemetery is a living entity. It's a place of closure. I'm sure you have a lot of military people who go just to find some peace and just maybe sit for a little bit.
We just one of our goals was to set up a memorial garden. We have the walking path. The walking path through the middle of this cemetery is like 350 feet long, 10 feet wide, and we wanted it wide enough so people with wheelchairs and wounded warriors who didn't have a problem walking up through there.
Mm-hmm.
But we also wanted to put in a little memorial garden, and that is for the people to walk off the beaten path and can sit down and just reflect. A lot of them have their dogs there. They can just reflect to the memory of their dog and just by themselves. And it's a nice little tranquil garden. So that was an idea we had. Well, yesterday we poured cement and we poured the concrete walkway to that memorial garden. So this spring it will be open.
Uh-huh.
And again, the landscaping people seen what we were doing, why we wanted to do it. And they brought in these huge setting rocks. I've never seen them so big. And they donated them. And they set it all over around the circle. So you can come and just sit on these setting rocks.
Wow.
So that's going to happen in the spring. So.
Okay. And tell us a little bit, if you look at the webpage, it refers to a canine Veterans Day.
Yes.
Could you tell us a little bit about those?
Sure. March 13, 1942 was the official day that Dogs for Defense was developed. So March 13th is, we requested through the state of Michigan, through Governor Snyder, that we wanted to honor our dogs on March 13th in the state of Michigan. And so each year he sends us a proclamation signed that March 13th is Canine Veteran Day. So the first year, we decided to have Canine Veteran Day, where we would bring in a couple of speakers and, you know, bring in some dogs and talk about Canine Veteran Day. And we got a hold of Mike Kowal. He was the senator in that, for that district, and he came in to give us a talk. But on March 13th in the state of Michigan, you are going to freeze sometimes. You cannot count on the weather.
Right.
So the next year, we decided to move it out a couple weeks. But it was a snowstorm. So now we decided we do it at the end of April. We got smart.
Maybe it's still Michigan.
Right. So it's, at least it's not so cold. So like last year, when we did it last week in April, it was like 65 degrees. So,
oh, perfect.
You know, that's a perfect time
to
do it. The sun was shining. No snow.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we do have a Canine Veteran Day every year. And we have different speakers that come and talk about the dogs and about what they do. You know, that's pretty much every year we do that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, for every life that's been saved, whether it's here or during a war situation, there's a story. There's a story of a great hero, of a four-legged hero,
yep,
that made it possible.
Yes.
So it's exciting. How long is the training that the dogs go through to become a trained war dog or police dog? Do you know?
Yeah, it's first thing, they don't start their training till they're about a year and a half.
Okay.
Okay. They'll do the basic training early, you know, the set stay and things like that. That's just your basics. But when they get into search and seek and search, or the bite work, as you call it, they're usually about a year and a half old. But once the dogs understand what you want them to do, they train pretty easy. Especially the German Shepherds. Now, and of course, the new breed that they're all starting to use right now, the Belgian Malinois. The Belgian Malinois doesn't have the inherited hip issues that a German Shepherd has had.
Right.
And you got to understand, there's a lot of money put into these dogs for their training and their care and the veterinarian care. So people have been shifting to the Belgian Malinois.
Can you describe that dog? I've never heard of that breed before.
Okay. Yeah, it's got the same traits as a German Shepherd, but they're smaller. Their average weight is about 55 pounds.
Oh, okay.
They're all tan and usually have a kind of a dark face. They're all pretty much marked the same.
Mm-hmm.
And how they got started was basically from the military was the Special Forces. Special Forces wanted to have a war dog that was easier to strap to their chest when they jumped out of the airplanes with them than a German Shepherd.
Okay.
With a German Shepherd weighing between 75 and 80 pounds, where a Belgian Malinois, he's around 50, 55
mm-hmm.
pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And then they found that the Belgian Malinois were tigers. I mean, they're like fur missiles.
Okay.
And when they come at you, they come at you.
All right.
You know? And so they're starting to get popularity.
Okay.
The police force is also using Dutch Shepherds. Dutch Shepherds is very strongly related to the Belgian Malinois. And again, it got the German Shepherd traits.
Mm-hmm.
And they use them a lot. So the other breed that they use today is Black Labs. Black Labs are great for explosive detection, for searching and seek and search to find things. They're not so good for security because they have to lick you to death. but they got a great nose, and they can find things, if not better than the Shepherds or the Belgians. So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So maybe when you have a war situation, you have a number of different breeds focusing on different strengths.
Yeah, most of the dogs are, you know, they're trained on two or three different disciplines. You know, they're multitask.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a bomb detection dog, but then if you look at their codes, if they put a P in front of it, then that dog's been trained on patrol now. So it's a patrol bomb detection dog.
Okay.
Or an explosive detection dog.
Okay.
So the Black Labs have turned out to be very good with that.
Mm-hmm.
You're very good with that. Again, you know, the Shepherds and the Belgians still do their job, but you can train more disciplines with the Shepherds than you can with the lab.
Right.
They do a great job.
We are almost out of time. I can't believe that this has gone by so fast. And I definitely want to save enough time so we can play Kenny's song one more time. Any big events coming up at the cemetery that we want to talk about?
No, matter of fact, this year we're going to kind of tone it down from December through through February,
mm-hmm.
But the winter months. Last year we left the flags up and they got all tattered.
Sure.
So this year we're taking them down. So there's no events and there's not much you can do out there in the wintertime. Our next big event will be Canine Veteran Day.
Okay.
And that will be in April.
The last Saturday, Sunday?
Yeah. We'll put it on our website.
Okay. So. All right. And that's mwdm.org. And lots of great pictures out there, lots of great stories out there. I told Phil I was looking at the site and trying to get some ideas of things we could talk about today, and I just burst into tears a few times. But it's so emotional. And just one more comment about the dogs. I understand that when you're in a recovery situation, 9/11, for example, periodically they have to plant live people for the dogs to find. Because the dogs go into an incredible depression, because if they're only finding the dead people, they need to see life too.
Mm-hmm.
So, any parting words?
No, I just I'd like to thank you for inviting me up here today.
Oh, thank you.
It's one of our missions, is to spread the awareness of these canines and how these canines have worked with us for years, and let's show some respect for them.
Couldn't put it better myself. All right, Phil, thank you so much, and let's get this started here. Alrighty. In the background is Kenny Lang. And Phil and Kenny, thank you both for being part of Impact today. It's been wonderful. Thank you all for listening to Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. The views and opinions expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. And this is WHFR Dearborn.
Seem to know my every thought and would always lead the way, more than a German Shepherd, was my closest friend, true and faithful partner, who would be there to the end. Always right beside me, standing strong and tall. The grace of God goes with her, four-legged hero, giving all. Deployed into a battle zone, hell on earth to me. Emmy knew the dangers that I could never see. Just like Cody, Tina, Buddy and Quinn, to name a very few, served her tour of duty until her time on earth was through. More than a German shepherd, she was my closest friend, true and faithful partner, who would be there to the end. Always right beside me, standing strong and tall. Grace of God goes with her, four-legged hero, giving all. Well, now Emmy has gone home now. It was a cold October morn. Somewhere in this land of ours, another hero's born. I think about her always when I cross that rainbow bridge. She'll be waiting right there for me and come running down the ridge. I'll cry and then I'll smile big when I think of the path she trod. And it's no coincidence in my mind that dog spelled backwards is God. More than a German shepherd, she was my closest friend, true and faithful partner, who would be there to the end. Always right beside me, standing strong and tall. Grace of God goes with her, four-legged hero, giving all. Yeah, the grace of God goes with her, four-legged hero, giving all.